guys. I'm Jessica.
I'm Jenna.
And I'm Stephanie. And you're listening to Pastors Wives Tell All, the podcast where we attempt to break down stereotypes and walls that exist within the church between pastors' wives and the church people.
We want pastors' wives to know you are not alone in this.
Plus, this is basically therapy for the three of us with a whole lot of dance parties. Hey, friends, and welcome back to Pastors Wives Tell All. Today, you are in for a treat because our friend Karen Stiller is back with us today, chatting about being ourselves without being full of ourselves. Karen is an editor, author, journalist, podcaster, a minister's wife, and a mama to three grown children. Friends, her book, The Minister's Wife, is a must-read for all minister's wives. Even the non-readers will probably be happily surprised by this page-turner, speaking as one myself. Okay, so enough of that. Let's get to it.
Hey, Karen. Welcome back to the podcast. Last time you were on, Stephanie was the only one that got to chat with you, and we were very sad about that. So we're excited to be a part of this conversation this time. And let me just tell you, for the non-reader, I am the non-reader in the bunch.
Your and book, me.
Yes, Jenna is too.
Yes.
Your book was so great. I did not put it down. Aww. I read it, I think, in like 2 days. That is like shocking for me. It's called The Minister's Wife. It is just, I don't know. I it was so much wisdom. I laughed a lot in it. I just felt like, yes, I get you. Like, aww, I'm not alone.
Thank you.
And so you did such an amazing job in this book. And we definitely still recommend your book to every pastor wifey out there. And if you have not listened to Karen's first episode, we had her on season 1, episode 14, Karen Stiller, How to Find Your Tribe When You're a Lonely Minister's Wife. Okay, Karen, but for those who maybe missed the first episode, don't know about your book, please just kind of share with us a little bit about your testimony, who you are, what you're doing, your writing. Tell us all the things.
Okay, well, first of all, thank you very, very much. And to have two non-readers say that they were able to read the book means a lot to me, because I have non-readers in my life. I allow them in, and okay. It's
we
a wonderful,
that.
Yes, it's a wonderful, wonderful compliment. And I love what you three are doing. I think it's so important to have these conversations and to build this kind of community for people who sometimes are searching for community and feeling maybe a little on their own. So thank you for that. So yeah, so I've been a pastor's wifey for almost 25 years. I'm coming to you today from Ottawa, Ontario. I've been a writer for that long as well. I started to write very shortly after our first son was born. I knew I wanted to be a mom in the home, but I also strongly suspected that being married to a pastor, I wanted to also bring some money into the household. So I started freelance writing, and I've kind of built it up over the years. I work as an editor for a Christian magazine in Canada called Faith Today, and I host a Faith Today podcast. So I do that, you know, I have a day job, but definitely a huge part of my identity and my vocation is, you know, being involved in the church as Brent's wife. So I wrote the book, The Minister's Wife, A Memoir of Faith, Doubt, Friendship, Loneliness, Forgiveness, and More, a title that to this day I have to read from a piece of paper. Because I'll get all the things mixed up. When I went back to school, I did a master's degree, and I needed to do a project for that. And I could have done anything. I could have written about anything, because it was just going to be a long writing project. But I quickly found that when I had the opportunity to do a deep dive into my own life, that this identity of being a minister's wife really impacted really almost everything. And so that's what I did that deep dive again to explore. And that was then the book came out in May of 2020. So yeah, it's such a unique and beautiful and challenging life. And it's really wonderful to be with other people trying to figure it out together. So thank you.
I know all about you. And every time I hear you speak and share, I'm like, I just love her all over again.
Well, I feel the same way. I think we should just sit together in one room someday and have a lot of fun.
So
but
good.
I will not dance on camera with you.
I don't know.
You never know what you might do.
That's true. Never say never, right?
Never. Because this girl right here does not dance, and not publicly. And somehow these girls made me do it.
Oh. And you saying that sounds like a challenge. Uh-oh. And I like a challenge.
Oh, so. Yes, you do.
Oh, my word. Speaking of dancing on Instagram, we actually recently had a conversation, me and you, via the good old gram.
Yes.
About this thinking, this you be you, this mantra we hear all the time now. And there's definitely good to be found in that statement when you view it in light of, okay, God created me.
Yeah.
He created my gifts. He created my personality, all these things that matter. And he wants me to be that person, nobody else. He wants me to utilize the gifts that I've been given for his kingdom. But, and there's a big but here, there's a danger to be found in that as well. So I want you to just share with everyone listening right now some of those thoughts you have when you hear that statement, you be you, boo.
Well, first of all, when I hear the statement, you be you, boo, I just want to like cuddle someone, because it's like, I mean, who could argue with that, right? It's a beautiful thing to be who God created us to be and to be our most authentic, non-phony self. So that, I think, is always good. And I am still trying to figure this out. And I think part of it is at the heart of the problem of how it's complicated to be a minister's wife. So I think this is like a central question and challenge for all of us to figure out. So I'd like to say first that I'm not sure anyone is ever fully themselves in most social situations, right? We're always impacted by the people who are with us in the room, by the expectations happening in the room. Very few people charge into church on Sunday morning being fully themselves and saying whatever they are thinking and so on. And that's not what we're talking about, of course.
Yeah.
But who we are also changes with time, right? We grow and change. We grow in holiness and closeness with God, who absolutely loves us exactly who and how we are, but also calls us to change and grow.
Right.
So that language of just be yourself sometimes, I think, can be a little bit self-involved, like it's the Karen Stiller show. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take into account that actually being ourselves in any given moment might not be the very best way to act, or that that may not be what other people actually need from us in a certain moment. So being ourselves in a church setting can actually be kind of weaponized, if I can use that word. So I've heard, you know, some pastors' wives talk about, like, I'm just gonna go in there and blah blah blah, like, you know, it's like all full-on guns, like, blaring,
guns a-blazing.
Guns a-blazing. That's what I was trying to think of. And it's like a defensive gesture that doesn't actually help build community or help them in the long run. So let me say, I don't actually have an answer to this. It's more just like, what are the questions that we can be asking of ourselves? So I remember once in my daughter's life, in her teenage years, she would intentionally, she went through the stage of like on purpose dressing badly for church. Like, and it was because she didn't want anybody expecting anything of her. So she was like reacting still, though, to people's expectations. Like I think she would say she was being herself. And I've done this same thing. And I've probably done it with clothing, too. And I'm a proud owner of Doc Martin boots. I love to wear Doc Martin boots.
I bet,
this is going to sound silly. It's a very like trite example, but I'm going to say there are times I strapped on those Doc Martins just to prove something. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? I mean, that's fun fashion, whatever. Yeah. But sometimes when we're still then in a cage of other people's expectations, we're reacting in a different way. So there's something unhealthy there to explore. So it's like another trap we put ourselves in. And then there's the whole die to self thing. So when we're talking about being, you know, fully ourselves, and what does that mean spiritually? And I think that's worth talking about too. So he must become greater, I must become less, like John 3:30. So as we push deeper and deeper into our spiritual lives, we are dying to self. And then, of course, you know, people who are way smarter and more spiritual than I point out, that's when we become so truly ourselves, right? That's the gift of self-sacrifice. So as ministers' wives, we have this incredible opportunity, like every Sunday morning, for amazing leaps of spiritual growth. By, you know, sometimes pushing back against our instincts and our need to be ourselves. So it's so confusing. You tell me. You figure it out.
No, I think, I mean, it's I think that is the hardest thing. I know we can go back and forth. I mean, we've talked about on the podcast before about, you know, even just how we dress, what we feel is, you know, comfortable and in style, but how will people feel when we wear that at church? Now, I can only speak for me and where I'm at. Like my church, everyone, you know, just dresses how they want to. We are a lower income church and people come in their hats and, you know, their holy jeans and or their stuff that they worked in the night before and they're just getting off work. And there's no judgment. I can't say there's none because I'm not in everybody's hearts, of course, but I feel freedom.
Yeah, good.
To wear jeans that have holes in them. Yeah. Whereas if I stepped into a church that, you know, just by nature wore fancier clothes and they wore dresses and khakis and the preacher wore a tie and suit, I would feel a little less comfortable. And then, you know, the women out there going, well, I'm still going to wear my holy jeans just to prove a point. Like, mm-hmm. I think what you're saying is, you know, that there's a thing that you're still allowing them to affect you.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you're going in my head, well, I'm just going to be me. And that's who I am. We definitely don't ever want to push women to do that and have a heart like that, because that's just a selfish heart. But we do want women to know that you should feel comfortable in your skin.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But when you feel, like you said, when you feel the most comfortable in your skin, that is when you are walking in line with who Christ has called you to be.
Yeah.
So no matter what you wear, what you're doing, when you're walking in that, there's going to be a peace that passes all understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
And I think that's where we have to get to individually. Mm-hmm. For each person, and definitely, like you said, checking yourself and making sure that it's not a self thing, mm-hmm. and just trying to prove a point for sure.
Yeah, that's good.
I agree. You've solved it.
Yes. We solved it at 9 o'clock in the morning. Okay.
So, Karen, when it comes to being a pastor's wife, how do you think that we should balance being ourselves, like we've been talking about, while still respecting our church and possibly different preferences and views among a church staff?
Yeah, that's really good. Like that is sort of a rubber hits the road question too, right? So, and I think part of it depends on what your role is in the church. So for me, I know there are some pastors' wives who are like full on, you know, present Monday to Friday or Monday to Sunday. What am I saying? You know, staff, team members, which I've never been. I've always, you know, been either like with my kids or working. But, you know, as much as involved as the next pastor's wife outside of that normal routine. So when it comes to staff, for example, I try to be a friendly, loving presence. I actually try to sort of stay above the fray, you know, that old sort of saying of just being friendly and warm. And again, do I always feel like being friendly and warm? Well, no. is that them being fake? No, I'm going to say it's not. I'm going to say it's trying. For me, it's like trying hard. That's what that comes from. So, but I think about what is going to help my husband, like, and what is going to hurt my husband. So I've always had this do no harm, you know, mantra. That's my position. My baseline is do no harm. So my husband had a kidney transplant in August, actually. He's had a kidney disease for a long time. And finally it was transplant time. So it was it all went really well. But he, of course, he was on medical leave for 3 months. And during that time, he did not attend our church, and neither did I. And I think there, some people are a little surprised at that. Like, we participated in worship online on Sunday, but mm-hmm. not really with our own church. I think we did that once. And part of why I didn't go, I knew in my heart that if I attended in person during those 3 months when he was not there, I would be critical. I am a critical mm. person when he is there. And so yeah. I knew I would find it impossible to attend church and not come home and say, well, the and this and that, yeah. and then get him kind of pulled back into it when he really needed to rest and heal and recover.
Yeah.
And so that, why am I sharing that example? It's like knowing what I can contribute without harming as I interact with other people in the church. So that's it. I think you named it earlier about knowing yourself and also knowing your danger spots. Like mm. when you know yourself, you know, yes, it's great to know how wonderful you are, but you also know your weaknesses and the danger areas, and you'll know when you're going in that direction and you got to haul yourself back.
Mm. I love that. Do no harm. Like yeah. that's a good way. Like, I feel like that's easy for all of us to remember.
I feel
everything.
Like we need a t-shirt.
Yeah.
For real. Call the t-shirt people. I love your t-shirt.
Yeah. T-shirt person. Okay.
Well, you know, it's pretty like all encompassing, right? And it's also kind of low hanging fruit, but it takes some effort to do no harm.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when you might be angry yeah. or bitter, you know, that's a hard thing yeah. for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For all the pastor wives out there, there's a fine line between respecting your church and people pleasing. How can we, as pastor wives, as ministry leaders, how can we know the difference? What has worked for you in your life? And give us some wisdom on that.
Yeah. So I think that no matter who we are or what we do with our lives, we all want to please other people some of the time, or we would be really weird. Like, I think that's sort of how we get along in community together is actually, yeah. and people try to please us too. So we know that there's this incredible unhealthy thing about needing to be liked and needing to be loved and doing things that we don't want to do just to please people, which is not good. So I think we need to be very aware of that unhealthy people-pleasing impulse, but I think the line will be different, you know, for all of us. So last week, Brent preached on let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near, don't be anxious about anything, from Philippians. And we were talking later about what gentleness means. And it's not about being soft-spoken or even pleasant or, you know, we know this, or doing what people want. It's about being mature and level-headed. So when I think about people-pleasing and respecting the church and a line, one quick example I come to is if people, and many people have done this to me, and I'm sure they've done it to you, listen, can you just tell Brent that blah, 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 and I won't be there, oh, and yes. this is that, but he needs to do that, and if I call her, then she'll call him, and then we'll see you on Tuesday. And so I will, that is a very real example to me of, I'm always tempted, to this day, I'm always tempted to say, yes, I will tell him that right away and scurry over and do that. But I have learned, and partly he's, you know, empowered me to do this, because he doesn't like that either, to say, mm-hmm. you know, I hear you have a message for Brent and you should call him, and that will, you know, he'll get the better message sooner if you just mm-hmm. do that yourself, or he's right over there. Why don't you just head on over and let's you and I chat about this other thing. So that for me is like a really concrete example of not people pleasing, having boundaries, but still being gentle and kind, which I think we mm-hmm. have to do. Like, we are in a position that we can have a huge impact on people's lives, you know, for good or bad, not just our husband's work, but people's lives and their perception of the church. So again, that tempering of what I really want to say versus and what I may be saying on the inside because I'm a sinful, fallen creature versus what this situation is asking of me. And that's the tension that we walk, I think, every Sunday for some of us who are more depraved than others.
I think I might fall into that category. I think she's talking about me.
Hey friends, we will get back to our episode in just a minute, but we wanted to take a moment to thank our patrons. We want to say a special thank you to those who support us financially through Patreon. You help keep this podcast going. If you are not a patron and would consider donating as little as the cost of a cup of Joe from Starbucks and a cake pop to this Pastor's Wives ministry, we would be so grateful. As a patron, you receive added perks like bonus episodes, free lock screens, and more. Check out our show notes for the link to our Patreon page where you can learn more. Now let's get back to it.
Okay, so Karen, I love the example that you gave where your husband's telling you to come back and what to say to these people when they come to you. And I just think you're a really great storyteller in general, obviously, because we love your book and you told all these stories. So I want to hear some more stories, like personal stories, if you have them, the ways that you've had to deal with this over the years in your ministry of balancing this whole being yourself, but then not being a people pleaser, just that tough balance. And then have you ever messed up? Have you just gotten this wrong a time or two? Just share a little more personal examples because we just love hearing your stories.
Well, thank you. And let me tell you that this isn't about me, but this is about telling stories and how important it is in safe community to tell our true stories to each other. Because like one of my favorite writers, Anne Lamott, says our stories are medicine. And I think that's true. So we need to have people in our lives that we can receive their stories and share ours back. So I just want to say that for people.
100%.
Yeah, it's so important. And that's what you're doing. I mean, that is what you're doing with your work. So it's so important. So I think one of the places I've gotten this wrong has actually been in my relationship with Brent. So for example, where my response to a situation has made things harder for him, where, and you know, I will say, if he was here, he would say, but that's just marriage. That was my, I was taking care of my wife and that's good. But I was also aware that my weakness was making things harder for him. So we went through a church split years ago where he, you know, left a church and started a new one. And I found it horrible. I found it horrible in every way. I was frightened, and he ended up having to not only sort of comfort and lead a group of people, but also, you know, take care of his panicky, you know, upset wife. And I look back on that and I don't know that I could have done it differently based on sort of who I was at that moment and all the things I was scared of. But I had to learn to trust, and I had to learn to, you know, believe in his vision and trust that he was making the right decisions. So basically, I've had to wrestle through, like wrestle with angels for any good thing that I think I've learned as a pastor's wife, because it is hard. It is wonderful. It is beautiful, but it's also hard. So another like actual episode, which I do talk about in the book, which was around the time of this church split, was when a woman who was a friend of mine, so in the church, and I think we would have called each other friends, which is a whole other landmine territory that I know you've talked about a lot, and that I still haven't figured that out about being friends with women in your church. But she called me on the phone, and you know, we were talking, and she sort of started talking about Brent in a way that was very negative, like your husband is, and your husband does, and your husband doesn't, and you know, just kind of all the things. And I was fully myself. I went full Karen, and I I said what I was thinking and what I was feeling, and it wasn't good. I basically told her off on the phone, and I it was not good. And I think she was shocked, and I think I was shocked, and Brent was not shocked because he knows me, I guess. And when I told him about it later, he said, well, that, you know, that sounds really hard. And that was about all he said. And then, you know, a few weeks later, I was not angry anymore, and I was ashamed of myself and what I had said and how I had reacted to this woman. So I asked her for coffee, and we went out, and I asked for her forgiveness, which she gave me. And, you know, she didn't fall into a puddle at my feet asking for my forgiveness, or, and in fact, sort of said something else that made me feel
super
bad.
Hard. Super hard. Yeah. It's like, okay, God, I'm trying to do the right thing here. Can you make it a little easier?
Oh my goodness. Exactly. And so it was really like, it was a mess. It was kind of a muddle of a situation. And I thought, this is a moment to not be a big baby. This is me talking to myself, and just keep on keeping on. Like, I've asked for forgiveness. I need it to do that. It doesn't matter whether she gets that maybe part of it was her fault too. That's not my business in a way. And I need to just move on. So, yeah, that was hard. And the thing is, we to this day, we are still in touch sometimes. Like, that was from a previous church. I hope she doesn't listen to this podcast. I don't. Well, but it's okay. If she did, I would just have to have another kind of conversation. So I think, yeah, I have so many moments of failure, or where I wish I had acted differently. You know, another time when I had really young babies and I went to church just to sit in the nursery with them, you know, everybody probably goes through that time in their lives. And I had put on makeup and I had done my hair and I had tried to look together and I thought I looked good. And a woman at church came up to me and said, oh, Karen, you look so tired. And I said, well, you look tired. And then I burst into tears. Embarrassing. And then she felt horrible, and it was just like, oh, I was, yeah, clearly I was tired, right?
Bless your heart. I'm trying not to laugh because I know that must have been hard, but
oh my gosh.
I mean, it was just awful. So I, anyway, yeah,
just a side note, don't ever tell anybody they look tired.
No
let them tell themselves they look tired.
Absolutely. I you know what, I stopped doing that on that day. It's like, yeah, I'm going to cross that off my list of kind things to say. Oh, you look awful.
This reminds me of something really funny that is not pastor wife related, but my husband likes to tell this story about my sister, which she does listen, and she is a pastor's wife, but she won't mind. She won't mind being part of a joke here. But when she was little, I mean, she was a little girl. She was like 10. Or 11 or something. My husband likes to tell this story all the time about how he came out like ready to take me on a date one day when he was down visiting. And she looked at him and she said, are you going to wear that?
Oh, that's good.
And he was like, yes. But it's just funny. Like the things that we say or people say, like, I don't know. Yes. Sometimes I do want to, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe punch somebody in the face.
Yeah, so don't do that.
Yeah. That's what happens when I'm in Africa. You know, the bigger you are, the healthier and richer you look.
Right.
And so it's really fun to go over there when you're having a struggle with your body and they're like, oh, you have gotten bigger. Or, oh, you know.
Yeah, and they like, and it's a compliment, right?
It's like a cow. It's just wonderful. Oh. It's like, oh gosh.
So this is where intent matters, right? Yeah. So, exactly.
Oh my goodness. That's great. Well, Karen, when you were talking about your other story about just the people that we deal with, and this is just anyone in general, we're always dealing with messy people because we're all messy and we're all sinful. And I read one time, look at me reading.
So you do read. Wow. You are a reader.
She
occasionally reads.
I think I read more than people, more than I say I do. But just reading about how the Lord, what is his intent? He wants us to always look heavenward. He always wants us to know that there is greatness to come and we will be with him for eternity. And there's no one perfect but him. And I think that when, if we can have the mindset of knowing when Jenna hurts my feelings or Jenna is not perfect or Stephanie's not perfect and we're hanging out and they do something or I do something, it's to remember that this side of heaven, it's not perfect. We're not going to have a perfect relationship when our husbands hurt our feelings or a church member hurts our feelings. To remember that it is like that. So we will look heavenward and look for what is to come.
Yeah.
And to remember that when we are dealing with ourselves and hard people, that this is not forever. Forever is coming. Eternity with him, with perfection, is coming. And so if we can have that mindset, if we will have this. And it's to remind us that this is not perfect life. It's coming later. I think maybe it'll help our mindset and helps me to go, it's okay.
And it also reminds us that this is why we need Jesus.
Yes,
exactly. this is why we need him.
Is that why?
Yeah. Good word. Good word. Truth. Yeah. Truth, as my son would say.
Yes. So Karen, we would love for you to tell us some scriptures that you maybe lean into when you're dealing with this type of situation, when, you know, you're dealing with the situation of the whole being yourself or walking in God's calling, or maybe even tell us, you know, what scriptures you lean on when you do want to punch somebody in the face. When they do something.
We just punched everybody today.
We're going to freak people out. They're going to think we're so violent. Okay. Any psalm. The Psalms are these, you know, this amazing book of longing, of crying, of reaching out, of self-knowledge, of truth-telling, of trust. You know, we're trusting God with our deepest, darkest selves. And I love all the Psalms. Psalm 42, verse 5, why am I discouraged? Why is my heart so sad? I will put my hope in God. I will praise him again and again. Now I am deeply discouraged, but I will remember you. We need to find the verb, right? There's always a verb. I'm going to remember, praise, forgive, trust, hope. There's always a verb moment in the Psalms where there's a shift, and the prayer, it makes that pivot into a discipline of praise and hope that helps them move forward. So the Psalms are huge. 1 John chapter 1, that's all about who Jesus is. For me, it's like pure poetry, that which was from the beginning, which we've heard, which we've seen with our eyes, which we've looked at and our hands have touched. That reminds me, you just said, Jessica, about remembering who Jesus is. And when we do that, we're not focused on our own hurt. We're not focused on all the people we want to punch. We're remembering who Jesus is. And that puts all of this into perspective, of course. So I think, and that discipline of reading scripture is huge. And I, you know, daily, if you can, I'm not perfect at that. I lurch forward in my spiritual disciplines, and that's okay too. I've learned to forgive myself for that and trust that it's like going to the gym, you know, like it's, if I do it for 3 weeks in a row and then fall off for two, it's okay. It's okay. You get a clean slate, turn back again to those spiritual disciplines and keep going.
I'm glad you said that, because I feel like, especially when you are a minister's wife, somebody who is supposed to be leading spiritually and all the things, you put this pressure on yourself to appear like you have it together,
right?
And that those kind of things, that you're always doing that. But we're not always doing that.
Right.
And I hate it when people want to pretend that they never fall off the train a little bit.
I know.
It happens. So I'm so glad you said that, especially since you're a little more seasoned in this ministry life.
Thank you. Seasoned. But you know what? What you just said is, this is where being yourself is a helpful thing. in ministry, because mm-hmm. my experience has been when I am transparent about these kinds of things, like in a women's Bible study or something, that it actually, it helps people. That's when yes. me choosing the moment that I am going to be fully transparent and fully be myself actually contributes, I think, to mm-hmm. someone else's spiritual path, because they're like, okay, this is not impossible. Yeah, she's not a spiritual giant either. It's okay. She's still here. I can, you know, like, it's like, mm-hmm, then it's yeah. like a gift you're giving by being yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's freedom. I mean, we were literally at a Christmas party the other night for our Thrive Women, and we have, you know, a meal, and then we have conversation cards, and you know, that was one of the things. I was like, I felt the need with who was at my table to tell them, like, you know, the last time I was in a season of drought, and it was because I wasn't being honest with the Lord. And it was just so nice, because then I had a couple of very quiet women at our table that don't usually speak. And you could see, like, I just kind of saw them kind of like relax.
Nice.
And then they opened up, and it doesn't have to happen all the time. I think you have to be very in tune to the Spirit, and sometimes that's really hard, especially if you are not in tune to Him, because you haven't read the scripture lately or talked to Him. But when you are, to use those moments, even if you're scared, even if you're afraid, to open up, because what's on the other end is freedom, not mm-hmm. freedom, not just for yourself, but freedom for someone else that you're talking with, that can open up Pandora's box on, you know, their relationship with the Lord.
Yep.
A good Pandora's box. Yes. Not the kind that's all sorts of icky things coming out.
Yeah. Snakes or something, right?
It's a good Pandora's box.
Yes. No, I think that's exactly right. You've named it. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you have been on the show before. So we have given you the three questions to end, but we have three new ones for you because you are special.
Thank you.
So your first one is, what is the most embarrassing or foot in the mouth moment you have had while being a pastor's wife?
Okay.
We are waiting.
Already.
years ago, we were in a large, beautiful church in downtown Toronto, and we were invited to have dinner at the home of a very, I will say, wealthy, kind of high society couple. Like, she had been a ballerina. She was a retired ballerina with the National Ballet, and he was a businessman. And I was a little bit intimidated, even though they were incredibly warm and down to earth, but I still felt a little out of my depth, like penthouse apartment, elevator that opens into their suite. There they are. Within 5 minutes, I ate an olive. There was an olive out on a, you know, a tray of olives. And I didn't know what to do with the pit because there weren't like any napkins or whatever that I could see. So I swallowed the pit, and then Brent had to give me the Heimlich maneuver.
No. Oh my gosh.
And while they watched and then left the room and then came back in and watched and left the room and came back in. And finally, I think we had moved into the kitchen, and the olive pit sailed out of my mouth, clattered into their big, beautiful, you know, porcelain sink. And I was and I was okay. But my throat remained so, like, it was clearly scratched up or something. I mean, so for the rest of the night, because of course we stayed, I couldn't really speak very well. And my shirt, which I had so carefully chosen, was covered, like, with olive spit dribble down my front. And our host, like, placed the salad in front of me and said, "I hope you can handle this."
I would have died. I would have left. You are brave that you stayed. I would have been like, I'm out.
Oh, bye. My gosh. I had to redeem it. Like, and in my mind, while Brent was giving me the Heimlich maneuver, in my head was, someday I can write about this, because like, I'm a writer to my toes. So I was like, this is going to be a funny story. If I live through this, this will be a funny story. But you know what? I really haven't actually written about it. But when I understood I could tell about an embarrassing moment, I was like, that's really embarrassing.
We appreciate you sharing that to everyone.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That is going to give everyone a laugh who's having a bad day. That's amazing.
And you know what? Like, not to beat the horse to death here, but if I had been freely, if I had been myself in a healthy way, I would have said, what do I do with this pit? Ah, ha, ha. Like, I would have, or I would have, you know, just asked for a napkin. But I was so intimidated.
That's so
true. I was so intimidated. Like, no, it's better to swallow this giant pit.
That is like, I could think of a whole lot of life lessons that we could.
Oh my goodness.
I think my sides literally hurt right now.
I know. We were trying to quiet laugh.
Yeah. But I was really having a hard time.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That's good. That is so good. You're welcome, listeners, for that story.
Maybe that was the moment of redemption right there. Maybe I'll never write about it. I just get to tell it to you.
I don't feel like I'm going to have another funny, embarrassing moment to ever tell, because I'm always going to think of yours and go, it's not as good. I'm not going to share it.
Well, pray that you won't have one as good as that.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Oh, boy.
Okay, Karen. So, next question. Share with us what has changed most about you over the years since becoming a pastor's wife. Just what growth have you seen in yourself?
So, I feel like this won't be encouraging. But I think that
just honestly,
okay. I think I have an ever increasing sense of my own weakness, actually, and an awareness of a fear of maybe that I haven't grown enough, along with a decision to believe. I have a friend, Daryl Dash, who's written a couple books about how to grow and, like, literally, you know, 8 steps. For becoming Christ-like. That's not the exact title, but, and I've asked him about this because I've interviewed him a couple times, and he says that if you don't think you've grown, you probably have, and that, and a deeper awareness of your own sinfulness is a sign of intimacy with God. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to choose to believe that. So it's not all like misery or anything. It's just like, the distance between me and my confession is shorter now. I know more quickly that I've messed up. I don't think it would have taken me 3 weeks. If I bawled out a parishioner on the phone, I don't think it would take me 3 weeks to sit down with her to say, I'm sorry. I think I would have I think now I'd know the next day or like 5 minutes later. So I guess that's growth. I know my weakness.
Sure. I understand.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm.
I understand that on a deep level. Because I feel the same in a lot of ways. Oh my, I think I told my husband this recently, just even reading All Is Vanity. Like, you know, when you're reading through some of these things and some of the darker times and darker, deeper thoughts of Solomon and David and all the things, I feel it in my bones sometimes. Just like, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
All is vanity.
Yeah.
And I mean, and even with myself going, Lord, like, I am such a screw up. Like, what is going on? Like, as far as like when I know my insides and I know my sin deeper than I've ever known, I fully can relate to what you just said. I don't think I've ever heard anybody put it quite like that.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you said that, because this has been me even recently and just feeling kind of sad, almost like an inner sadness, not like a depression, but just this inner sadness of just, God, like, this world is so stinking broken and I am so broken. Like that, just knowing that on a deeper level, I think, than I've ever known it and felt it before.
And then
so
you,
I'm glad you shared that.
We have the assurance that we are held close to his heart, you know, in the palm of his hand. We have that assurance, but it's our need that brings us there. So it's okay to know that.
That is so good. Okay, Karen, this is your last question. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so what is the best piece of ministry advice that you have been given over the years?
You know, I feel like I haven't been the recipient of a lot of advice, and I wish I had been. It reminds me again that we have a role to play in reaching out to younger pastors' wives and saying, you know, can I help you? Or, if you're interested, here's some things I've learned. But I have been an observer. So I think I've observed all kinds of different ways of being. And we don't get this chance very often, right? Like, we're tied up on Sundays. So it's not like we get to see how people operate. But I have seen a couple of different models that have helped shape how I am. So one would be, you know, a pastor's wife who is like super, super involved, front and center. And for me, it was like, I barely got through my wedding day because people were looking at me. So I don't want to be up on the podium beside Brent. And I don't have an MDiv, and that's not our tradition. So I knew that I didn't want to be that. I want it to be more in the background. I want it to be more supporting him. And I had my own vocation and my own work. So I knew that wasn't for me. And then on the other extreme, there was, you know, I've met ministers' wives who, because they were hurt, actually stopped attending their husband's church and, you know, really pulled like so back so far. And I knew that wasn't for me either. So I think, and again, this maybe circles back to where we started about being yourself, knowing yourself and figuring out how you are going to be a pastor's wife. And I hear the phrase, I think you've probably noticed it too, this typical pastor's wife phrase gets used. I actually hate that. I hate that phrase. I don't like it one bit, because the typical pastor's wife you're talking about probably had her, you know, I'm sure had her own struggles and her own journey to become the piano player or whatever it is we're thinking of when we say typical pastor's wife. There's no such thing. Like, we're done with that. And I think it robs women of their dignity who were also just trying to get by, right? And fill God's calling on their life and help their husbands. So anyway, so that's a little off track maybe, but I think it's been watching and then figuring out, okay, not that. Yes, this for now is the way I'm going to serve God and help my husband in the best way I can.
Yeah, I would say observing is how I've done it as well. When we were youth pastors, I was, and I've said on the podcast before, unfortunately, I did a lot of observing of how not to be.
Right.
But that's what I did for 14 years. I observed how not to be, and then I didn't want to be that.
Yep.
If I was ever in a lead pastor's wife role, I knew I was doing the best I could as a youth pastor's wife, and made a whole lot of mistakes and made some good ones. But I mean, that's life. But I think, like, as you were talking, I was like, oh Lord, I'm so thankful that like we get to do this podcast, because I'm the same way. I didn't have anybody ever really giving me good advice or ministry advice. It was just from observation. Yeah. And so I think this is such a blessing, you know, for whoever's listening and for Jenna, Stephanie and I, especially because we get to talk with all of you. And so we're just gaining so much more wisdom and knowledge and understanding that we would have missed out on if we wouldn't have done the podcast. So it's for super cool to kind of, you know, just as you were speaking, I was listening, but I was also thank you, Jesus.
Well, you know what? What I've really, if people are listening to this and haven't joined your Facebook group, I really encourage them to do that, because I see a lot of advice seeking there, right? So it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I think people are being given good wisdom from the community, right? Hard-earned wisdom. Yeah. But it's a reminder to me that it's difficult to find places to ask questions and get that kind of advice. So you three, again, I commend you deeply for the work you're doing, because it's so important.
Thank you so much, Karen. We just love you.
I love you too.
We do. And we're so glad you came back on and wanted to chat with us again.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for creating this space.
We appreciate it. Well, you know, maybe next time we're speaking one day, we'll be in Canada.
Yes.
Hey.
You couldn't resist.
I did. Good
for you. It's a true thing.
It is. Well, thank you so much, Karen, for being on with us and just giving us so much wisdom. This has been so fun, and giving us some really good laughs as well.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, the laughs. Thank you. My side still hurts.
Thank you. Beware the olives.
That's going to be a
t-shirt too.
Beware of the olives.
Don't eat the olives.
Hashtag Karen.
All right. Until next time.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Okay, friends, if you have enjoyed this episode, please help us spread the word by sharing us on Facebook and Instagram. Instagram is where the party's at.
Yeah, girl, where the party is at. Also, guys, if you could just pause right now what you're doing and give us a quick great rating, 5-star would be wonderful, and a review, and subscribe to our podcast. This, for real, helps other pastors' wives find us who wouldn't be able to otherwise.
And you know what is the best news? We love y'all. Y'all are amazing. We hope you tune in next week.